Chapter 49. Father and daughter, there is a hush through Mr. Dombey's house. Servants gliding up and downstairs rustle, but make no sound of footsteps. They talk together constantly, and sit long at meals, making much of their meat and drink, and enjoying themselves after a grim unholy fashion. Mrs. Wickham, with her eyes suffused with tears, relates melancholy anecdotes, and tells them how she always said at Mrs. Pipchin's that it would be so, and takes more table ale than usual, and is very sorry but sociable. Cook's state of mind is similar. She promises a little fry for supper, and struggles about equally against her feelings and the onions. Towlinson begins to think there's a fate in it, and wants to know if anybody can tell him of any good that ever came of living in a corner house. It seems to all of them as having happened a long time ago, though yet the child lies, calm and beautiful, upon his little bed. After dark there come some visitors, noiseless visitors, with shoes of felt who have been there before, and with them comes that bed of rest which is so strange a one for infant sleepers. All this time, the bereaved father has not been seen even by his attendant, for he sits in an inner corner of his own dark room when anyone is there, and never seems to move at other times, except to pace it to and fro. But in the morning it is whispered among the household that he was heard to go upstairs in the dead night, and that he stayed there in the room until the sun was shining. At the offices in the city, the ground glass windows are made more dim by shutters, and while the lighted lamps upon the desks are half extinguished by the day that wanders in, the day is half extinguished by the lamps, and an unusual gloom prevails. There is not much business done. The clerks are indisposed to work, and they make assignations to eat chops in the afternoon, and go up the river. Perch, the messenger, stays long upon his errands, and finds himself in bars of public houses, invited thither by friends, and holding forth on the uncertainty of human affairs. He goes home to Ball's Pond earlier in the evening than usual, and treats Mrs. Perch to a veal cutlet and Scotch ale. Mr. Carker, the manager, treats no one, neither is he treated, but alone in his own room he shows his teeth all day, and it would seem that there is something gone from Mr. Carker's path, some obstacle removed which clears his way before him. Now the rosy children living opposite to Mr. Dombey's house peep from their nursery windows down into the street, for there are four black horses at his door, with feathers on their heads, and feathers tremble on the carriage that they draw, and these, and an array of men with scarves and staves, attract a crowd. The juggler who was going to twirl the basin, puts his loose coat on again over his fine dress, and his trudging wife, one-sided with her heavy baby in her arms, loiters to see the company come out. But closer to her dingy breast she presses her baby, when the burden that is so easily carried is borne forth. And the youngest of the rosy children at the high window opposite needs no restraining hand to check her in her glee, when, pointing with her dimpled finger, she looks into her nurse's face, and asks what's that? ... And now, among the knot of servants dressed in mourning, and the weeping women, Mr. Dombey passes through the hall to the other carriage that is waiting to receive him. He is not brought down, these observers think, by sorrow and distress of mind. His walk is as erect, his bearing is as stiff as ever it has been. He hides his face behind no handkerchief, and looks before him. But that his face is something sunk and rigid, and is pale, it bears the same expression as of old. He takes his place within the carriage, and three other gentlemen follow. Then the grand funeral moves slowly down the street. The feathers are yet nodding in the distance, when the juggler has the basin spinning on a cane, and has the same crowd to admire it. But the juggler's wife is less alert than usual with the money box, for a child's burial has set her thinking that perhaps the baby underneath her shabby shawl may not grow up to be a man, and wear a sky blue fillet round his head, and salmon-colored worsted drawers, and tumble in the mud. The feathers wind their gloomy way along the streets, and come within the sound of a church bell. In this same church, the pretty boy received all that will soon be left of him on earth a name. All of him that is dead, they lay there, near the perishable substance of his mother. It is well. Their ashes lie where Florence in her walks, oh lonely, lonely walks, may pass them any day. The service over, and the clergyman withdrawn, Mr. Dombey looks round, demanding in a low voice, whether the person who has been requested to attend to receive instructions for the tablet is there? Someone comes forward, and says yes. Apostrophe, Mr. Dombey intimates, where he would have it placed, and shows him, with his hand upon the wall, the shape and size, and how it is to follow the memorial to the mother. Then, with his pencil, he writes out the inscription, and gives it to him, adding, I wish to have it done at once. It shall be done immediately, sir. Apostrophe, there is really nothing to inscribe, but name and age, you see. Apostrophe, the man bows, glancing at the paper, but appears to hesitate. Mr. Dombey, not observing his hesitation, turns away, and leads towards the porch. I beg your pardon, sir. Apostrophe, a touch falls gently on his morning cloak, but as you wish it done immediately, and it may be put in hand, when I get back, apostrophe, well. Apostrophe, apostrophe, will you be so good as read it over again? I think there's a mistake. Apostrophe, where? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the statuary gives him back the paper, and points out, with his pocket rule, the words, beloved and only child. Apostrophe, it should be, son, I think, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you are right. Of course. Make the correction. Apostrophe, the father, with a hastier step, pursues his way to the coach. When the other three, who follow closely, take their seats, his face is hidden for the first time shaded by his cloak. Nor do they see it any more that day. He alights first, and passes immediately into his own room. The other mourners, who are only Mr. Chick, and two of the medical attendants, proceed upstairs to the drawing room, to be received by Mrs. Chick and Miss Tox. And what the face is, in the shut-up chamber underneath. Or what the thoughts are. What the heart is, what the contest or the suffering. No one knows. The chief thing that they know, below stairs, in the kitchen, is that it seems like Sunday. Apostrophe, they can hardly persuade themselves, but that there is something unbecoming, if not wicked, in the conduct of the people out of doors, who pursue their ordinary occupations, and wear their everyday attire. It is quite a novelty, to have the blinds up, and the shutters open, and they make themselves dismally comfortable over bottles of wine, which are freely broached, as on a festival. They are much inclined to moralize. Mr. Towlinson proposes with a sigh, amendment to us all. Apostrophe, apostrophe, for which, as Cook says with another sigh, there's room enough, God knows. Apostrophe, in the evening, Mrs. Chick and Miss Tox take to needlework again. In the evening also, Mr. Towlinson goes out to take the air, accompanied by the housemaid, who has not yet tried her morning bonnet. They are very tender to each other at dusky street corners, and Towlinson has visions of leading an altered and blameless existence as a serious greengrocer in Oxford Market. There is sounder sleep and deeper rest in Mr. Dombey's house tonight than there has been for many nights. The morning sun awakens the old household, settled down once more in their old ways. The rosy children opposite run past with hoops. There is a splendid wedding in the church. The juggler's wife is active with the money box in another quarter of the town. The mason sings, and whistles as he chips out PAU 50, in the marble slab before him. And can it be that in a world so full and busy, the loss of one weak creature makes a void in any heart, so wide and deep, that nothing but the width and depth of vast eternity, can fill it up? Florence, in her innocent affliction, might have answered, Oh my brother, oh my dearly loved and loving brother, only friend and companion of my slighted childhood. Could any less idea shed the light already dawning on your early grave, or give birth to the softened sorrow that is springing into life beneath this rain of tears? apostrophe, apostrophe, my dear child, apostrophe, said Mrs. Chick, who held it as a duty incumbent on her to improve the occasion. When you are as old as I am, apostrophe, which will be the prime of life, apostrophe, observed Miss Tox. You will then, apostrophe, pursued Mrs. Chick, gently squeezing Miss Tox's hand in acknowledgement of her friendly remark, you will then know that all grief is unavailing, and that it is our duty to submit. Apostrophe, I will try, dear, and I do try, apostrophe, answered Florence, sobbing. I am glad to hear it, apostrophe, said Mrs. Chick, because, my love, as our dear Miss Tox, of whose sound sense and excellent judgment there cannot possibly be two opinions, apostrophe, my dear Louia, I shall really be proud soon, apostrophe, said Miss Tox, will tell you, and confirm by her experience, apostrophe, pursued Mrs. Chick, we are called upon on all occasions to make an effort that is required of us. If any, my dear, apostrophe, turning to Miss Tox, I want a word. Miss apostrophe, demeanor? Apostrophe, apostrophe, suggested Miss Tox. No, 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 apostrophe, said Mrs. Chick, how can you? Goodness me, it's on the end of my tongue. Miss apostrophe, plus affection? Apostrophe, apostrophe, suggested Miss Tox, timidly. Good gracious, Lucretia. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Mrs. Chick, how very monstrous. Misanthrope is the word I want. The idea. Misplaced affection. I say, if any misanthrope were to put, in my presence, the question, why were we born? I should reply, to make an effort, apostrophe, very good indeed, apostrophe, said Miss Tox, much impressed by the originality of the sentiment, very good. Apostrophe, unhappily, apostrophe, pursued Mrs. Chick, we have a warning under our own eyes. We have but too much reason to suppose, my dear child, that if an effort had been made in time, in this family, a train of the most trying and distressing circumstances might have been avoided. Nothing shall ever persuade me, apostrophe, observed the good matron, with a resolute air, but that if that effort had been made by poor dear Fanny, the poor dear darling child would at least have had a stronger constitution. Apostrophe, Mrs. Chick abandoned herself to her feelings for half a moment, but, as a practical illustration of her doctrine, brought herself up short, in the middle of a sob, and went on again. Therefore, Florence, pray let us see that you have some strength of mind, and do not selfishly aggravate the distress in which your poor papa is plunged. Apostrophe, dear aunt. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Florence, kneeling quickly down before her, that she might the better and more earnestly look into her face. Tell me more about papa. Pray tell me about him. Is he quite heartbroken? Apostrophe, Miss Tox was of a tender nature, and there was something in this appeal that moved her very much. Whether she saw it in a succession, on the part of the neglected child, to the affectionate concern so often expressed by her dead brother, or a love that sought to twine itself about the heart that had loved him, and that could not bear to be shut out from sympathy with such a sorrow, in such sad community of love and grief, or whether he only recognized the earnest and devoted spirit which, although discarded and repulsed, was wrung with tenderness long unreturned, and in the waste and solitude of this bereavement cried to him to seek a comfort in it, and to give some, by some small response. Whatever may have been her understanding of it, it moved Miss Tox. For the moment she forgot the majesty of Mrs. Chick, and, patting Florence hastily on the cheek, turned aside and suffered the tears to gush from her eyes, without waiting for a let from that wise matron. Mrs. Chick herself lost, for a moment, the presence of mind on which she so much prided herself, and remained mute, looking on the beautiful young face that had so long, so steadily, and patiently, been turned towards the little bed. But recovering her voice, which was synonymous with her presence of mind, indeed they were one, and the same thing, she replied with dignity. Florence, my dear child, your poor papa is peculiar at times, and to question me about him is to question me upon a subject which I really do not pretend to understand. I believe I have as much influence with your papa as anybody has. Still, all I can say is that he has said very little to me, and that I have only seen him once or twice for a minute at a time, and indeed have hardly seen him then, for his room has been dark. I have said to your papa, Paul, that is the exact expression I used, Paul, why do you not take something stimulating? Your papa's reply has always been, Luia, have the goodness to leave me. I want nothing. I am better by myself. If I was to be put upon my oath tomorrow, Lucretia, before a magistrate, apostrophe said Mrs. Chick, I have no doubt I could venture to swear to those identical words. Apostrophe, Miss Tox expressed her admiration by saying, my Luia is ever methodical. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in short, Florence, apostrophe resumed her aunt, literally nothing has passed between your poor papa and myself, until today, when I mentioned to your papa that Sir Barnet and Lady Skettles had written exceedingly kind notes our sweet boy. Lady Skettles loved him like a where's my pocket handkerchief? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Tox produced one. Exceedingly kind notes, proposing that you should visit them for change of scene. Mentioning to your papa that I thought Miss Tox and myself might now go home, in which he quite agreed, I inquired if he had any objection to your accepting this invitation. He said, no, Luia, not the least. Apostrophe Florence raised her tearful eye, at the same time, if you would prefer staying here, Florence, to paying this visit at present, or to going home with me, apostrophe, I should much prefer it, and, apostrophe was the faint rejoinder. Why then, child, said Mrs. Chick, you can. It's a strange choice, I must say. But you always were strange. Anybody else at your time of life, and after what has passed, my dear Miss Tox, I have lost my pocket handkerchief again, would be glad to leave here, one would suppose. I should not like to feel, apostrophe said Florence, as if the house was avoided. I should not like to think that the rooms upstairs were quite empty and dreary, and I would rather stay here, for the present. Oh my brother! Oh my brother! Apostrophe, it was a natural emotion, not to be suppressed, and it would make way even between the fingers of the hands with which she covered up her face. The overcharged and heavy-laden breast must sometimes have that vent, or the poor wounded solitary heart within it would have fluttered like a bird with broken wings, and sunk down in the dust. Well, child, apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Chick, after a pause, I wouldn't on any account say anything unkind to you, and that I'm sure you know. You. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.